Now I'm going to turn the remainder of the service over to our guest speakers, the Reverend Jane Twinnell and her husband, Sky Yardley. They're going to start with a reading and then proceed into their presentation about living with Alzheimer's, living with dementia. They have been doing that since Sky's diagnosis with early stage Alzheimer's in the summer of 2016. His age was 66. Jane is a retired UU minister who specialized in working with small congregations. She is the author of Big Ideas for Small Congregations. You may recognize the name of that book. Sky is a retired family mediator. They live in Burlington, Vermont, with their son, Sayre, and his partner, Emma Champlain. Play interesting board games and take in a round of disc golf whenever possible. They've been touring the country now with presentations such as this at UU congregations, and we are so pleased to have them with us this morning, Jane and Sky.
You may notice, today's words are sometimes in order and sometimes not. Some are longer, some are shorter. Some words might even begin to rhyme. Others have slipped their anchors to time. I'm talking about my world now. If you want to know if you are one of the 5.5 million people in America living with Alzheimer's or another dementia, take a number, get in line, and wait. There's no quick way to find out. Dr. P informs me that the only way to know for sure is to scoop out my brain, slice it up, and examine it under a microscope. And by then, I might be a little less interested in their results. The good news is that blood work, neurological testing, and brain scanning can help narrow down the short list of possible maladies, including normal aging. Set a baseline. Dr. P explains that Plan B is to exclude other possible causes of my alleged memory and cognitive issues to make sure that all other possible causes of my memory, no, my alleged memory and cognitive troubles are ruled out, leaving Alzheimer's holding me back. So, I donate buckets of blood and much more fun, I ride into not one but two space-age scanners, once with radioactive isotopes bubbling in my bloodstream. All this takes time, and I use this time to become more educated about dementia. I learn that the search for the correct diagnosis is much more than pinning the proper label on my condition. If I have a condition, they are searching for a condition that can be treated. A condition that can be treated. I might be lucky enough to have a wonky thyroid or Lyme disease or syphilis or depression or, hey, maybe a brain tumor. All of these conditions can be treated, giving people the hope for a return to their former lives. The seldom spoken truth lurking around the shadows of dementia is that there is no return, ever. to the life we knew and the person that we were. I learned that Alzheimer's and most other dementias are incurable, fatal. After some weeks, Dr. P calls me into his office. This, at last, is it. Finally, he has all my ducks in a row. Neuropsychological testing complete. Neurological physical exam complete. Blood work screening complete. Personal neurological history complete. Family neurological history complete. Magnetic resonance imagery scan complete. Positron emission tomography scan complete. Though we have a full half hour to meet, he gets right to the point. I wish I had better news. Ooh, I'm listening now. Leaning over his computer, he reads, findings. There is hypometabolism most pronounced in the parietal and temporal lobes. To a lesser extent, there is hypometabolism evident within the frontal lobes also. Hypometabolism of the posterior gyri more pronounced than that seen on the frontal lobes. There is also markedly decreased tracer uptake noted in the primary visual cortex of the occipital lobe. So, these are the data that the scan has detected, Dr. P continues. Hypometabolism means your brain is not utilizing the glucose as it should. This problem is manifested in several areas of your brain. The conclusion. I'm sorry to have to tell you this. The results of your PET scan are consistent with early stage Alzheimer's disease, says Dr. P. It's not a slam dunk diagnosis at this time. We'll be following you over the months and years ahead to monitor your progress and keep an eye on things. I'd estimate you have about 8 to 10 years, give or take. You mean 8 to 10 good years before I managed to mutter? Well, no, that would be lifetime. A long pause. Dr. P and I are each waiting for the other one to say something. After I don't, he offers, in the meantime, there are drugs available.
The results of your PET scan are consistent with early stage Alzheimer's disease, says Dr. P, soothingly and solemnly. Thank God, I say, there is something wrong with Sky. I am not going crazy. I place my hand on Sky's arm and watch his deer in the headlights look blossom. These words might be soothing to me, but they sure as hell aren't soothing to Sky. He claims he remembers little from that day, but with significant short-term memory loss, what can you expect? Can't say as I remember that much either. Some questions and answers between Sky and the doctor. No, we can't predict anything. Probably you have 6 to 8 good years, maybe more, maybe less. Not really answers then. Mostly statements that could be said to anybody. Some discussion of medications, pros and cons, and whether it's worth trying one. Then we leave. We leave to go home after holding hands on the way to the car. In the car before Sky starts driving and most of the way home. Luckily, it's not far. Sky makes 3 phone calls to his oldest friend, to his sister, and to his daughter. He will tell his son later that day when his son gets home from work. I try and give him privacy for those phone calls. I stay in the house, alternately crying and rejoicing. You may think it's cruel that I'm rejoicing. I'm happy, thrilled even, that after several years of knowing that something was not right, I now know what the problem is. For me, knowing gives me the opportunity to do something about the problem. Not knowing leaves me constantly wondering, fussing, trying this, suggesting that, only to leave both Sky and I confused and no closer to an answer.
Not that there is really anything for me to do right now. This isn't a treatable disease like cancer or heart disease, where one can research treatments and make changes to lifestyle, look for a second opinion or the best research hospital. There is nothing to be done here. I don't even need to educate myself about the disease, as I spent several years working in a memory care unit in a nursing home. I know about Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. I know the kind of care that is necessary as someone reaches the stage of needing institutional or full-time help. So for right now, all there is for me to do is to learn patience. And that won't be easy. Currently, there are 5.5 million people in the United States with Alzheimer's disease or another form of dementia. 200,000 of those are people with early onset familial dementia. The rest are just folks, people like you or I. It's estimated that there will be 16 million people with dementia by the year 2050. Dementia is the sixth leading cause of death in the United States. In Oregon, there are currently 62,000 people with dementia, expected to rise to 84,000 by 2025. Three-quarters of people know or knew someone with dementia. 42% have had a family member with the disease. How many of you know someone with dementia? And for how many of you was that a family member? Statistics work. It's not just the person with the diagnosis that has to live with the disease. Their loved ones have to as well. There are currently 178,000 unpaid care partners in the state of Oregon, providing 202 million hours of care worth $2.5 billion. Unfortunately, it is well known that the health of care partners tends to suffer, and those changes add up to $110 million in increased health care costs. Alzheimer's disease is the most commonly known form of dementia, but there are other kinds that appear similar but may have additional symptoms. Vascular dementia, Lewy body dementia, frontotemporal lobe dementia, dementia associated with Parkinson's and Lou Gehrig's disease, and several other rare kinds. Whatever the cause of the dementia, its common symptoms are a change in memory, specifically with a loss in short-term memory initially, a change in language, the loss of the ability to find words, to carry on a conversation that makes sense, and the ability to read and write, and changes in what is known as executive functioning, the ability to make appropriate decisions about everyday activities such as cooking, eating, bathing, dressing, handling financial matters, toileting, driving a car, and shopping. Researchers still do not understand everything about dementia, and there is no treatment. There are a few medications that may slow the symptoms for up to a year or so in some people. In others, they do nothing or cause serious side effects. However, even with all the losses, many skills remain, and some may even be heightened. People usually retain or even gain the ability to sing and play a musical instrument, do art, play certain games, enjoy nature, and do sports. We know someone with dementia who has lost all of his language, but whose math skills are completely intact, and he spends his day playing computer games. Another person who is almost blind, who took up crocheting after their diagnosis and now creates beautiful, complicated works of art. And still someone else who remains an avid downhill skier, working with people with disabilities through an adaptive sports program. Life does not end with a dementia diagnosis, but first, the testing required to find out.
for the test. In the summer of 2016, Jane and I signed up with the Memory Clinic, operated by the University of Vermont Medical Center in Burlington, Vermont. On their website, they say, memory loss can be a serious medical condition, or simply a recurring forgetfulness that affects many of us. To help patients understand their memory condition, the memory program provides evaluation, diagnosis, and treatment of age-related memory disorders. That sounds okay. I mean, they've got some ways of reassuring people about their memory loss. If my family wants me to get checked out, what harm could it really do? Maybe once they hear a neurologist say, I've got simple recurring forgetfulness, they'll cut me a little more slack. And in truth, my memory is not all that hot these days, but whose isn't it? 66. You know, you walk into a room, and you stand there like a post, wondering why exactly I wanted to go in there. Most of us do that, don't we? Please? Yeah. So here we go at the memory clinic. We make our way inside. Jane and I are separated. We're each interviewed by psychologists, and we're both asked about my skills of daily living. How am I doing at dressing myself, eating, getting myself to the toilet? Been in any car crashes lately? Whoa, this is how they decide if I have a serious medical condition. I'm probably in the clear. Then comes the hour-long neurological exam to test my cognitive and memory abilities. Okay, this is when I can shine. I was always a good tester in school, and by now I'm feeling pretty confident about this one, clearly a major part of their assessment. This test is where they sort me. Ace it then, Sky. Sure enough, easy. At the start, what am I holding? That's a pen. What's the weather today? What season is this? Really? This stuff is what they post on the walls for the droolers in the nursing homes or the little kids in preschool. How about what am I doing here? How about something at least a little challenging? Copy this drawing. Easy. And this one. Easy. And this one. Still easy, mostly, but there's more details. And this one. Possible, but oh, my brain is cramping up now. And this one. Uh-oh. And possibly 3D, all the detail. Takes me three times to even get close. After a few more hard ones, now draw a clock that shows 10 after 10. Ha! I am ready for this question. I've learned that people with Alzheimer's can't draw clocks for anything. And I practice at home. Over and over I practice at home. And I can crank one out fast, accurate, absolutely no sweat. Now, how about some extra credit for confidence and speed? Do I really need to be here? My tester wants to know what this phrase means. She wants to know what the following phrase means. People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. I'm sorely tempted to tell her one of my favorite jokes, the one about the Jungle King that ends tragically, people in glass houses shouldn't stone thrones. But something tells me that this is not a great time to be alive as. After all, she's trying to evaluate my brain here. I don't want her taking points off her bad attitude. Soon the test is almost over. My tester tells me a long-involved story with numerous characters, numerous adventures. It gets longer and longer, more involved. Of course, I'm expected to repeat it all back. Then, a long list of numbers to memorize. More and more, so I'm falling on my face in frustration. For a break, I get to count backwards from 100 by sevens. Who's trying that? Next, I'm instructed to fold a piece of paper lengthwise, set it on the floor, then pick it up and place it on the desk. And for a grand finale, she wants me to tell her the convoluted story of 15 minutes ago with as much detail as you can. Ouch.
Life changes. Relationships change. Grandma or grandpa can no longer babysit, but they can still tell stories, teach a grandchild to fish or to garden. Mom or dad become childlike, and the child has to become the parent. No role they ever wanted or expected. Spouses have to renegotiate their relationship. Perhaps the one who has handled the finances or done the shopping can't do it anymore, and the other one has to learn how. Libido changes, and they have to create a new sexual relationship. The spouse without dementia may take on a more parental role, checking that their partner is dressed, bathed, fed, and safe. Spouse or adult child, one day they will realize it's no longer safe for their loved one to drive, and they will have to figure out how to negotiate that tricky terrain. But creativity reigns. Okay, so I can't do X anymore. What else could I do? I can't read, but I can still comprehend books on tape. What things will help me negotiate the now confusing world a little bit easier? I can rely on my smartphone or a paper calendar or a little notebook where I can write things down before I forget them. It's not safe for me to drive anymore, but I can walk or get around by bike. I can't play bridge anymore, but I'm still a whiz at rummy or dominoes. There's no reason to sit home and watch TV all day. There are events to attend, volunteer work to do, basic household activities like vacuuming, laundry, shopping, snow shoveling, lawn mowing, and gardening to be done. So you have to be ready for the unexpected.
At the store, number one. Alzheimer's, you are so slow. I can run circles around you if I want to. To prove it, I just drew another clock. Took 19 seconds, and it wasn't a bit difficult. Unlike at the store yesterday, $6.41. First, I hand over a 5 and a 1. I brought some change from home, so I dump a few coins on the counter. Quarters, nickels, dimes, 2 pennies. Oh. My mind is getting seriously busy, tangling, jumping. Way too many possibilities, most of them skyrocketing over 41 cents. Others, not enough. The store clerk is patient, watching me pushing the coins around and around and around. I really can't do it. Find 41 cents. At the store, number two. The Vermont State Liquor Store in Burlington is a busy place this Friday afternoon in May. The colleges are winding down. The students are winding up. And the downtown liquor store is shaking. 20-somethings dominate the store, both behind the counter and in the long, polite lines of customers waiting to check out. The store is well prepared for the onslaught. This is one old guy, 2 or 3 times the age of everyone else. He's kind of disheveled, wearing work clothes. Despite his small purchase, he manages to hold up the line, emptying one of his pockets onto the counter. Why? Now the old guy is randomly sliding a pocket full of change across the counter at the clerk, muttering something. Homeless? Maybe. Drunk? Probably. Or he could have escaped from his nursing home. No, no, none of the above. Just me in another cameo appearance as the demented one.
As the old saying goes, once you've seen one person with dementia, you've seen one person with dementia. We are all fully human and fully individual. We have different likes and dislikes, different dreams, different priorities, different family makeups, different activities we enjoy, different skills. Our wide diversity makes the world a more interesting and lively place. This includes people with dementia or any other disability. They are still individuals at whatever stage they are in their disease. Sky here may seem normal to you, able to speak in front of a group, to read and write with clarity, but you've heard a little of his challenges, and I can tell you more. In conversation, he may lose his train of thought. He often forgets whether or not he's eaten a meal. He has to check the calendar repeatedly throughout the day to remember what we are doing and what day it is. He often asks me the same question over and over and over. In the meantime, he's still active, reading voraciously, gardening, playing the piano, volunteering at our community bike shop, our community sailing center, and our community theater. He plays disc golf, rides his bike, skis. He's close to his adult children, his friends, and his sister. Me? I'm still trying to cultivate patience. Not there yet. I have learned to answer Sky's questions without saying, but I already told you that. I have learned to give Sky time and space or hold his hand when he gets confused and anxious. I have learned that I need time to myself, which I get with long walks, lunches with friends, quiet time early in the morning when I'm the only one up, and time in my garden. I have given myself the space to grieve my losses and Sky's losses and our kids' losses. And by reaching out to others through our blog and through public speaking, we are hoping to erase the stigma and misconceptions about dementia, to help people understand that it's just a disability that needs to be accommodated as we so carefully accommodate other disabilities, and that people with dementia have as much inherent worth and dignity as anyone else. As Richard Taylor, author of Alzheimer's from the Inside Out, says, those of us with Alzheimer's disease can never be who we were, and too many people still want us to be, but we are who we are. We need others to become more informed, more understanding, and make more of an effort to understand us.
Sometimes it is hard. Paranoia, hallucinations, nightmares, and over-the-top anxiety can be regular co-travelers. How can I stay silent and ripping apart at the same second? How can I worry so hard and still keep up the strength to keep my train on the rails? I can tell you 100 ways. All of these things, everything will go down in an instant. One gory step to the next, and the next, and the next. All twisted and wrong. Is peace out there somewhere? Somewhere? Yes. Intermixed with the bad times are the peaceful times. My life is all over the place these days. But I'm pleasantly surprised to see how writing and reflecting on my experiences helps me to feel more confident and less overwhelmed by it all. Like for the millions of travelers who find themselves on the detour to Alzheimer's Canyon, equipped with a map of blank pages, a little guidance goes a long way. So one reason to write is self-serving. It helps me understand and learn from the often confusing new life that I've got going on. And if other people on the dementia detour, or with friends, loved ones on the detour, if they can feel some comfort or support from these words, all the better. We demented ones and our care partners need to be recognized, respected, and above all, listened to as we stumble along this journey we never asked to take. I'm living with the assumption that understanding and compassion are essential to the survival of this one world that we all share. My plan is to go on chronicling my experiences just as long as I remain able to do so.
A dementia diagnosis, like any other life-limiting diagnosis, is an opportunity to embrace change, to try something new, to learn new skills and adaptations. It's an opportunity to talk about end-of-life decisions with your loved ones, conversations that every family should have. It's an opportunity to heal relationships, to talk about how to handle care needs in the future, to explore the things that make life worth living. It's an opportunity to make a difference for others. And this is for certain. A person with dementia may lose their cognitive life, but they will never lose their emotional life. Love them and they will feel your love, even if they don't know who you are. Life is precious. None of us can sit here today knowing when or how we will die. That is one of life's mysteries, and one that makes our days that much more precious. Live your life well. Face your challenges. Be there for your loved ones, and be sure to give thanks. Amen. We have just a few minutes now for questions, comments.
Hi, my name's Kathy. I just want to start off by saying thank you so much for what you're doing and what you do, sharing this with everybody. It means a lot for everybody to learn, and I have yet learned more. And questions I would probably ask you separately, but I do have some for you.
Okay.
I just want to say straight out, thank you so much.
Yes, I like this information about mental disease. My wife just died recently. So I'd like to put this in broader perspective. Now, of all things which we need more research in this area. We need more social welfare. But we all should think about, you can't have both butters and guns. We have lectioned about the school board needing more teachers, the police need more police. We have bridges with these to rebuild. And we have to make a decision as how do we spend our money? Like Martin, try to get them more to the black movement. We must expand our interest in this problem of dementia in the broad scope of how do we spend money, what risk do we take, what risk do we don't take. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's interesting to hear a story where you are communicating in the very early stages. It's so often, certainly in my case, where my wife has died, where of Alzheimer's or the complications arising from Alzheimer's, really, where we didn't know she had it until it was too late to communicate the way that you're communicating. If we had the kind of conversation you're having, it would have been so much easier. For me, in dealing with her condition, the most difficult thing was in the early stages where she was argumentative, where she was, I had to warn her friends when they came round not to use key phrases like, surely you remember. That would send things off like a match to a keg of gunpowder. In the end, we had no friends that would come around because, frankly, she was really unpleasant. And we went for 2 years when no one would come visit. And to be able to talk about it the way you talk about it is doing me good to be here.
Hi, my name is Scott, and I am so grateful that you're here today. Thank you for being so candid and so honest and for sharing yourself so openly. It's a wonderful gift. I work as a hospice chaplain, and I would say probably 80% of the folks I work with have end-stage Alzheimer's disease. So I'm working with families who have been on this journey for a very long time. And a couple of things that you said I think really are an important thing to remember for those of us that have loved ones, friends, and those that want to learn more about how to work with people who have this difficult disease. And that is that the emotional life doesn't end. And I think that's so important to remember so that people aren't isolated, so that we don't ignore people because we don't know what to do, how to be with them, what to say, how to help, that there's still somebody inside that can feel and that can love. And I want to thank you for also saying that each person with dementia is different, and each personality is different, just as everybody that we know that doesn't have dementia is different. And in my work, as I go in and get to know people, I learn something different from everybody that I work with. And I have to say, it has been the privilege of my life to work with this population. And what you're doing, I think, is so needed. And I'm very grateful for you. So thank you.
My name is Kirsten, and I have a very specific question. I hope you won't find it insensitive about your storytelling change at the grocery store. Is that something that you needed to complete on your own, or would it have been helpful if the cashier had stepped in and said, oh, I see what I need right there, let me just...
You're talking about the store?
That's right.
I think that kind of the thing that really stood out for me at the store is that everybody there knew something that I didn't. And also I appreciated that the guy did, you know, he didn't hustle me along. He wasn't, you know, rolling his eyes. It was just part of his day. Maybe that's life at the liquor store.
But he did end up helping you.
He did. He pulled out the change
and goes, that's what he does all day. And it turned out to be fine. But one thing I wanted to ask you all, do you have any guesses of what I did after I left the liquor store with my purchase and went home? Pardon me?
Yeah, I did like beer.
2 o'clock, very much like that. What I did was I got out my change thing, dumped them on the counter. Okay, 41 cents. It was simple, but I did it over and over, just like I did the clock. And I needed to tell myself that I wasn't as stupid as I tell myself that I was at the time. It's really, one thing that's really rough are words like stupid, moron, ignorant. I mean, everyone has their own trigger words, but hearing these words after, now that I know the name of the road that I'm on, it hurts more than I was aware of before.
And that's an excellent question, which is something that we recommend that people do if you're with your loved one who has dementia. Ask them, you know, do you want me to help you find words? Do you want me to help you complete a sentence? Do you, you know, and they'll either say yes or no. And ask them every time, because from one day to the next, they may want something different.
So, interesting. My family, it runs in, Alzheimer's runs in the women, and I've seen it go from generation to generation. So when my great-grandmother got it, her three daughters didn't treat her very well because they were all probably scared and saw that it was coming. So then to watch my mom take care of my grandmother and trying to not treat her the way that her mother had been treated, and then knowing that I'm probably going to end up with my mom and my kids are probably going to end up with me eventually, trying to get through that resentment, because you do, people get resentful, especially if they think they're coming next. So watching my great aunt and how they treated my great grandmother, it was really very sad. And so my mom still has some issues, but at least she was able to take a different path, and hopefully that will continue through the generations.
This is an interesting subject for me, because I have noticed that I have considerable memory loss, and I'm kind of identifying what you're talking about, the realization of what's happening to me. And what's kind of good about this morning is that I don't feel like I'm all alone.
I just had a question. I know when you practiced drawing the clocks, that seemed to help. And I wondered if practicing making the change actually seemed to carry over and make it a little bit easier. Did was it a skill you could work on?
Yes. It is a skill, and repetition is a good way to learn. But what really is learning? I mean, who am I cheating? You know, when I know the answers in advance to the questions that they ask. You know, I don't want to look dumb or whatever. Nobody does. But, and that's part of the way the testing works too, is they push you and push you and push you until, okay, at what point do they crash and burn? And that's what goes, you know, and that's the medical model, the way I understand it. But what just happened to
my question is, excuse me, that you practice making change for 41 cents.
Yes.
Well, then you would practice making change for 56 cents and 72 cents. And then the next time you were in that situation in the store, did you find that it was a little bit easier?
It was a little bit easier, yes. And that helped.
You haven't had trouble since.
But it's going to be something else. It's going to be like, okay, I'm at a restaurant with a friend, and what about the tip? So it's like, okay, I got clocks down now. And probably until they don't have them down anymore, that's good. So that's until I get the clock skill. And I'm really good at change now. I can play story.
You worry about the next generation that won't know how to draw clocks.
Yeah.
Or make change.
Or make change.
One more, and then I think we're going to have
she's
to...
She's put her hand up a long time.
Did she?
Okay.
Hi, my name's Sue. I'm a nurse, and I've worked almost exclusively with geriatrics and Alzheimer's dementia. And I find it has been a great privilege, like the man from hospice. There are intellectual deficits, but the emotional connections that people make, they're always there. And it seems to me that getting people to appreciate that fact is really going to help, and you've really voiced that. Just because someone has intellectual deficits does not mean that they are stupid, useless, anything like that. It means that they have a disease, like we all will get someday, and that we need to be compassionate and warm and friendly right till the end for everyone.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you so much. And after spending 18 years working with private care, providing private care services for individuals with dementia and their families, I want to just say that Jane's comment really was the strongest one for me when she said, they know you. They know that you love them, whether they know who you are or not. And so it's being that loving presence that means more than anything. Thank you so much, Jane and Skye.